And welcome to the Christina Cook Show. I am, of course, Christina Cook. It would be a little weird if I wasn't, although I'm sure that happens. So, but not on this podcast tonight. I am Christina Cook. You are listening to the Christina Cook Show. I want to explore this the story about Carson and the hit piece that Politico did on him. Kyle Chaney wrote this hit piece that was basically completely fabricated. I mean, completely fabricated, and we've all kind of heard the stories going around and so forth. The whole story has to do with whether or not he was offered a scholarship to West Point, and the basis for the hit piece was that, well, first of all, you can't be offered a scholarship to West Point because it's taxpayer funded, nobody pays to go there, blah 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 blah, and he never applied. And so, you know, based on those two things, Politico put together this entire story that said that Ben Carson was this complete liar and that, you know, all of this stuff that he had based his campaign on, which I thought was really funny because I hadn't even heard the story until Politico brought this out. And the refutations started going around about how it was a complete lie. I hadn't heard it. I didn't even know that he had been, you know, considered for West Point, that he was part of the ROTC program, et cetera, et cetera. And so Politico puts this story together to try to annihilate the candidacy of Ben Carson, who is now polling at the top of the GOP field. And he's, of course, the target. That makes him the target. So I want to put this story in perspective. Is what I'd like to do, because this is part of a larger narrative. This is part of a larger story arc, if you will. And I use that term sort of lightly, but not really. What we've got going on, and this was, there was an article in thefederalist.com, on the thefederalist.com blog, came from D.C. McAllister, well worth reading. Because she really puts this all into perspective. She's reporting on a book from Michael Walsh. The name of the book is The Devil's Pleasure Palace, The Cult of Critical Theory and the Subversion of the West. And I've got to read this book. I haven't read it yet, but it looks like he talks about a lot of the same things that I actually talk about. The influence of the German philosophers, the influence of the Hegelian framework that has really created this nihilistic tendency in the West to where nothing is real. There is no real good. There is no real evil. There's only some sort of synthesis of the two. This is the basis of Marxism. This is the basis of communism. This is the basis for everything that we know that's evil in the West, in the Western civilization. And so this is the problem. And you know, this is the problem that we are fighting back against. And this article from D.C. McAllister is just absolutely brilliant at exposing this. And the basic premise of this article and the basic premise of this podcast is that we are watching a story unfold that had a beginning, it's had a middle, and it has an end that is yet to come. And as with any good story, we know that there is a story arc, that there are things that pull all of this together. And if you look at it in the framework of that, it starts to put some of these heroes and villains into their proper places. And you start to see them for what they really are. Now, there are those who are going to push back on me and say, you know what, life is not a story. It's not. And it's true. It's true to some degree. But I do believe that when we look at the arc of history, and we're not on the right or wrong side of that, okay? I just want to make that very clear. There's no right or wrong side of history. When we look at the arc of history, and we look at the events that have come before and the events that are yet to come, we see that it is in fact unfolding in this great plot. And the story of America is that story. That's the story that I'm primarily concerned with right now and here and now, and what we're talking about. It's the story of America. Now, I talk about the beginnings a lot. I talk about our founders and you know, what the potential was, you know, what they had set up for us in Act One. You know, I mean, that's if you're familiar with story structure, at one point in time, I wanted to be a fiction writer, if you can believe that. And, I really did. And then I turned out that the truth is way stranger than fiction. So I just write about real stuff. But it's there's usually three parts, three acts, if you will, to any story narrative. And part one, act one, sets up the problem. It sets up the situation for the acts that are going to come. Act two is generally the part that's really hard, and it's why I did not become a fiction writer, because it's really hard to sustain the action through that. But we've had an amazing act two in America. The founders set it up in act one, and then they handed it off to their posterity. They handed it off to the rest of us and said, "You know what? We gave you a republic, now go keep it. That's what you got to do." And for 150 years, we did exactly that. We did really well. There was the westward expansion. There was the Industrial Revolution. There was all this technological innovation, and everything that our Constitution unleashed on the world, which was just absolutely amazing. We became that shining city on the hill. I mean, we really did. And we set up this example for the rest of the world to follow, that when you safeguard individual freedom, when you safeguard individual rights, when you create the environment in which all of these things can happen, you know what? They do. And it's a miracle. It's the coolest thing ever. People start to rely on themselves and their own brains, their own innovations and creativity, and they come up with this stuff that you would never dream in a million years, or at least 100. I mean, think back what this world looked like in 1915. Think about what it looked like in 1815 and what it looks like now. And think how cool that is. This thing that has been unleashed on the world, this wonderful creature that is America, and what we've done with it. And then come the villains. That's what happens in Act Two. And then come the villains, and they show up and they start to try to destroy this beautiful thing that has been created, this beautiful hero's journey that we are on, and they try to take us down. Of course, it wouldn't be a hero's journey if we didn't have villains. It's the part I keep forgetting. And you got to remember that. This country would not be quite so precious if we had not had to fight so hard for it. I forget that. I bet you do too. It's so frustrating to be in the day-to-day battles. It's so hard. But we have to have them. We have to place a value on what it is, this beautiful thing that we're trying to save, and why we're trying to save it so hard. Without the villains, we'd take it for granted. So given that they are going to be part of this narrative, let's look at the villains. Let's look at who they are. I mean, we know that they have their intellectual history in the German philosophies. We know that they come from Marx, they come from Hegel, they come from these idiots who exported their philosophies into America in the early part of the 20th century. We know that that's the roots. But how has that come to fruition in the United States of America during the past century? What I want to tell you is that there are three, what we've got is are basically three big areas, three big cultural institutions, if you will, that they have entrenched themselves in. We've got the media, we've got education, and we've got entertainment. Now, education is trying to teach us how to think. Entertainment is trying to influence what we think. The media tries to influence what we do. And it's the media that I want to concentrate on tonight, because it's the media that is trying to get us to do something. Whenever you hear these slanted stories, basically every single word that comes out of anybody's mouth in the mainstream media, if you hear these things, you have to first ask yourself, what is it that they are trying to get me to do? What is it that they want? What's the effect they are trying to have? Because I can guarantee you, it's not to trust what they're saying because it's the truth. That ain't what's going on here. They are the part of the villains. They are one of the triumvirate villains in America right now. We've got the media, education, and entertainment. Media is one of the three heads of the Hydra here. and they want something from you. Every time they open their mouths, they want something from you. And so with this Politico story, I want you to ask yourself, what is it that they're trying to do? And we've seen this pattern already. We've seen it from time immemorial. But you know, I mean, we saw it in 2008. We saw it in 2004 when with the Killiam memos, where they tried to denigrate George W. Bush and his National Guard service when they fabricated those memos. Basically, we called that Rathergate, if we remember correctly. Of course, you know, Brian Williams and all the crap that he made up, you know, trying to take down George W. Bush, all of these horrible things that happened in Katrina, except that none of them actually did. But that was his attempt to try to keep George W. from actually being able to govern. Now, no matter what you think of George W. and his ability to govern, it is not the media's place, never has been, never will be the media's place to try to take down these politicians and get them to not govern through the use of fabrications. Now, keeping them accountable because of things they have actually done, completely different matter, okay? But he was making stuff up out of whole cloth. That's lying. That's immoral. That is wrong. And Brian Williams got the fate that he deserved. So that's, you know, I mean, Brian Williams, whatever. We know that the media lies. So they've lied. They've insulted. I mean, look at the CNBC debate that we had up in Boulder and the question that John Harwood asked of Donald Trump. He said, so is this a comic book version of a presidential campaign? That was what he asked him. Why would he ask Trump that? I'll tell you why. Because Trump, in this narrative, has set himself up to be the warrior hero. He is the one who is going to try to fight for us. That is why he's so appealing. He has become, if you want to take the comic book thing, he has become sort of a superhero in that perspective. Because he wants to fight for us. He wants to fight against those things that are taking America down. He wants to build a wall. He wants to end illegal immigration. He wants to make America great again by eliminating those things that are making us not great. That's a warrior hero. And so that was why Harwood's question was fabricated the way that it was. He wanted to make Trump into a caricature, a comic book, and make him irrelevant by asking that question, because that impression is going to stick with people. Well, he is sort of a comic book character. He's larger than life, certainly. There's no doubt about it. Donald Trump is larger than life. He set out to be that. I applaud him for it. I want to be larger than life, too. I do. At some point in time in my future, I really hope I am. And I mean, we have heroes who are like this. Rush Limbaugh is another. He's a hero of mine anyway. And he's sort of the warrior hero in the same way. That he's larger than life. He's out there to slay the dragons and do the things that need to be done and call the truth to power. And that's who Rush Limbaugh is. That's who Donald Trump is. You know, these are the roles that they are playing. And that is how they're going to be attacked. Now, Carson is a different kind of hero. You know, what we're looking at, this entire story arc that I'm talking about, we really are talking about the difference between good and evil. And DC McAllister covers this in her story, and I think she does it brilliantly. But she points out that, you know, we have good. We have good that we relied upon for a century and a half. A good that said that the individual is greater than the collective. A good that said that family is important. A good that said that church is an integral part of our society. And a good that said that objective truth not only can be known, but should be known. But since the invasion of the Germans, for want of a better imagery here, we've got evil. We've got evil descended upon our land. This is why we are so, we're in the state that we're in. We've got an evil that says that the collective is better than the individual, that says that the family has to be subservient to the state. The state gets to decide what happens in your family. The state gets to decide how your children are educated. The state gets to decide what your children learn, how you interact with them, and indeed whether or not they can stay with you. The family is subservient to the state. Secularism is better than the church. They've been pushing this atheistic morality, this atheistic amorality throughout our society for over almost a century now. That you shouldn't have faith, you shouldn't believe in these things, or if you do believe in these things, then just keep it to yourself. You know, we don't want, I saw a great meme today. Oh my gosh, it was awesome. It had Tim Tebow on one side and Caitlyn Jenner on the other, and I knew I wouldn't call him that, but you know, whatever. So we had Bruce Jenner dressed up in an evening dress on one side and Tim Tebow on the other. Tim Tebow saying, "I am a Christian," and then all these, you know, little thought bubbles from the crowd. Keep it to yourself. We don't want to hear it from you. Blah, 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 blah. Caitlyn Jenner saying, "I am a transgender cross-dresser," whatever it was that he said. And oh, yay, you're such a brave woman and blah, blah, blah. I just thought it was funny. So we've got, you know, the secularism that they have been pushing to the exclusion of the church, that to try to push out the church, get the church out of everything, relegate it to this tiny little corner where it has absolutely no effect on society. That's evil in my mind. That's one of the greatest evils. And finally, you know, we had objective truth. Now we've got relativism. We've got nihilism. We've got this idea that nothing means anything and anything goes. That it's all this weird synthesis, and that's all we're trying to find is the compromise between good and evil. You know, I mean, we're just trying to, and of course they don't call it that. They just call it, you know, the compromise, that we can govern, we can, you know, we can all just get along and tolerate and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So we've got this battle set up between good and evil, and that's what we're fighting. So in this battle, what do you need? What better hero is there in a battle between good and evil than virtue itself? And that's what Ben Carson personifies. I mean, he is a good guy. There is absolutely no doubt in my mind he is one of the best men in America. Absolutely no doubt. I don't agree with some of his policy positions. You know that. You know, we've been through this. That's okay. But in this narrative, that's what he represents, is virtue itself. So, of course, what are they going to go after? His virtue. They're going to try to make him out to be a liar. They're going to try to make him out to be not as good a guy, and in fact, a deceptive, evil creature who is just trying to make everyone think that he's a good guy. That's the line of attack. And that's where Politico came from. That's where Kyle Chaney came from in putting together and fabricating this story in Politico that unfortunately got legs and forced the Carson campaign to respond. What a shame. What a shame that is the spot that our media is sitting in. That they're making up stuff in order to take down political candidates to do what? To try to get us to do what? Stop supporting him. He's at the top of the polls. They don't want to see that anymore. They're frightened of him. And so they want to take him down. They want to make him not occupy that space, not occupy that virtue space. They want to make him into, you know, just not good enough. He's just not good enough. He's a liar. He's going to lie to you. Doesn't matter to them at all that Hillary continues to lie, demonstrably lie, in fact, has been proven to be lying by agencies within the government and is still outrunning her campaign, not behind bars. Would somebody please explain this one to me? Never going to figure that out. So we've got Trump and Carson, that they've attacked both of them. They continue to attack, and they will continue to attack. They're not off the hook yet. The next one is going to be Ted Cruz. The next one they're going to try to take down is going to be Ted Cruz. Now, Ted is not the warrior hero. He's not trying to fight necessarily for us. He's fighting for the country. He's fighting for the idea. He's the freedom fighter. And he's fighting for the Constitution. And so I'll bet you $5 right now that they're going to find some policy position that he's taken, some statement that he has made that contradicts his constitutional stance. Or they're going to try to spin something that way. Or they'll just make it up out of whole cloth. Doesn't matter. To them, it really doesn't matter. But that's the attack line that they're going to make. That's how they're going to come at Cruz. It's going to say, "You're such a great defender of the Constitution. You're such a great constitutional scholar. But here's a policy position that you took in 1994, whatever." And they're going to try to take him down that way. That's the tactic for Cruz. After Cruz, it's going to be Fiorina. And Carly has set herself up to be the foil. And so the line of attack against her is going to be to cast her as one of those women who rose to success on the backs of other women. And I've known women like that. Every single last one of them. Every single last one of them, a diehard liberal Democrat. Every single last one of them, more than willing to stab me in the back the second it was turned. Every single one of them. So that's how they're going to try to paint Carly. That's what they're going to try to do to her, is they're going to try to make her look like one of those women. And she isn't. I sincerely believe that she is not. I also sincerely believe that it does not matter one single bit as to whether or not she could occupy the Oval Office and do an effective job. Not one single bit. But that's the line of attack they're going to take. Especially after this last debate when she was trying so hard and successfully trying to win people over with her personality. She is a very charismatic woman. Very charismatic woman. I think she's got a great sense of humor. And she was very winning, I thought, in the CNBC debate. But that's going to be the line of attack. But she's not going to come first. The next one's going to be Cruz. They've attacked Trump, they've attacked Carson. Now they're going to attack Cruz. He's going to be next. And it will be very, very interesting to see how he handles it. I think he'll do better than fine. He's been attacked so much in the Senate that it's not going to be a problem. The thing I think that's really interesting about all this, and the part that people tend to forget, and probably no one forgets who is listening to this podcast, but I think America as a whole, especially considering when you look at the ratings of the nightly news on the Big Three, you look at that and you realize that, 45, 50 million Americans are getting their news from these liars. And they're believing them. They believe that those folks are the same as, Walter Cronkite when we were growing up, committed to journalistic integrity, committed to telling the truth, committed to telling the story. And they have absolutely no interest in doing that whatsoever. That's not what the media is about anymore. The media is about manipulation. The truth is secondary, if at all. The truth probably isn't even a consideration. The only thing that matters is serving the narrative that they want to see happen. That's the only thing that matters at all. And that is why Kyle Cheney, and that is why Brian Williams, and that is why Dan Rather, and that is why all the rest of these idiots going back to the beginning of the century almost, that is why these people are so willing to fabricate things out of whole cloth. If they want to do that, they should go work in Hollywood. They'll still be a problem, but not as big of one. If they want to make up stuff, if they want to write stories that have no basis in fact, go work in Hollywood. That's what fiction writers do. But they're probably not talented enough to actually make any money there. They figured out how to manipulate the news cycle. They figured out how to manipulate American watchers of news, people who are hungry for that news fix. They figured out how to manipulate them. And so they make the big bucks doing that, shaping the narrative, changing how people act in America. What we have to do is push back on that, obviously. I mean, and how many times do I say that? I probably need to find another phrase. I mean, obviously we need to push back on it. But how do you push back on a media machine that's that big and that has that, it's that deeply entrenched? What you need to do is pull as many people as you can away from that nightly news, away from the mainstream media, away from that 24-hour news cycle, that 24-hour entertainment cycle. If it bleeds, it leads. And if it doesn't bleed, we're going to cut it, because that's what we need. That's what they do. They make the story. Or they make the story up. One or the other. Very rarely are they actually reporting real news. Stuff that actually happened in exactly that way. Pull people away from the mainstream media. Turn them on to some other alternative news sources. That's the beauty of the internet, is that we can get news from both sides. I'm not going to say that news is ever unbiased. It's not. It's not ever unbiased. But help people see that there are other ways to interpret this story. There are other views on the veracity of these stories. There are sites out there that actually fact check these things and debunk them. It's worth getting people to at least take a look, if you can. If they do watch mainstream media, and if you watch mainstream media, if you watch, you know, the big three, NBC, ABC, CBS, watch their nightly news, do so with a jaundiced eye. Do it for the purpose of seeing how we are being deceived. Watch it sort of as a meta exercise. Is it how the news is making the news? That's the thing that we need to understand, so that we can turn that around when we're talking to people. We can turn that around when we're having these conversations. It's information gathering. It's intelligence. It's spying on the enemy. That's the only reason to watch the mainstream media. They are not giving you news. CNN falls in that same category. Headline news obviously falls in that same category. MSNBC claims that they're biased. They don't hide it. That's fine. Whatever. Watch them to see what the enemy is saying. Obviously, don't take a word they're saying as the truth, because I have yet to see it on there. I really do. This, when you step back and you look at all this as a story arc, and you see these villains, you see the heroes, it not only becomes a bunch more entertaining, but it starts to put things in their place. I'm an analytical person. I like things to have a place within the structure, and now I see it. I'm beginning to see how this structure comes together. And I like seeing the different roles that these candidates are taking on. I like understanding how they fit in there. And it also points up the rest of the GOP field and how they are not occupying those hero positions. They are looking for the compromise between good and evil. Jeb Bush, Chris Christie, John Kasich. You know, they are looking for that compromise between good and evil. There's a great quote in this D.C. McAllister article. It said, when you mix ice cream and poop, it's still poop. And I thought that was absolutely brilliant. Ayn Rand put it somewhat, you know, less poetically when she said, there is no compromise between food and poison. You're always going to get poison. So, you know, that's what we're looking at when we're talking about compromise. You can't. Not when we're at this stage. Are there practical tactical compromises? Maybe. I'm not going to concede that one either, but possibly. But when we're talking about principles, We're talking about the founding principles of this country. There are no compromises. And our heroes in the GOP, our heroes in the GOP field understand that. And the villains in the GOP field don't. And the mainstream media, the media, period, in a large part, they occupy that villain role. We need to push back on them. We need to defund, but that's not quite the word I'm looking for. We need to declaw them so that they are no longer an influence on our culture, so that they no longer have the ability to move what we do. They should not have that power, especially if they're not willing to take on their role as the fourth estate in an honorable fashion. They should be removed from the picture entirely. Thanks so much for listening to me tonight. I'm Christina Cook. You've been listening to the Christina Cook Podcast. Come find me on Facebook, facebook.com/Christina Cook Show. That's Christina with a K. You can also find me online at my blog, ChristinaCookShow.com. I hope to hear from you. Until then, remember, America is great because Americans are great. So go out there and be exceptional.